Welcome back to the Basketball Coaches Roundtable Podcast. I'm your host, Ben Newman. Today's guest of the roundtable is Coach John Alesi. Coach Alesi is the head coach of Baruch College in New York City. Coach John Alesi, thank you so much for your time and congratulations on the addition to your family.
Thank you for having me, and I really appreciate that. It's good to talk basketball. I've been a lot of Sesame Street and stuff like that these days. So this is a nice change of pace for me.
I think we all can be understanding of what you're going through. Let me just go around. We have two others sitting on the round table with us today. We have Coach L. Green from Beckham High School in Brooklyn and Coach Chris Ballerini from DeWitt Clinton High School in the Bronx. We each go around, we ask you one question, perhaps a follow-up if there is, and I start. So Coach, you just finished your eighth season, I believe. All right. Four CUNY finals, two chips, two NCAA appearances, and five ECAC appearances. All right. That's a pretty good run. And I guess, my question is, you know, Baruch has been, since you got there, from my understanding, it's like the gold standard of the CUNY. You've put so much work into it, and not saying that Radkis before you didn't do anything, because he was great, but what do you think you are doing differently than the other teams in the conference? Is it game prep? Is it film? Is it practice, recruiting? Like, What has gotten Baruch to the level that they're at?
Yeah, well, I appreciate the kind words, about the program. And I don't know if we're the gold standard, but we do have pretty high standards for ourselves and our kids. And, we believe in setting the bar high, really chasing excellence. I don't know that we do anything necessarily different from the other schools in the conference. We have some really good coaches in our league, and it's gotten better over the years. And I think that the conference and a lot of the teams throughout the league have, are really on the right path, to being, successful and to strengthening our profile. But, in terms of what we do and what's made us successful is, I think it starts with just, it's an overword used, but our culture, I think, is very strong. And, you alluded to Coach Rankis, who was the coach at Baruch and my coach for 29 years before I took over. So a lot of the building blocks were put in well before I got there. Having played for A, it made it a little bit of an easier transition taking over a successful program in terms of dealing with alumni and knowing the school, having played there myself and having coached with Ray for a couple of years. But, having that foundation, is so important to any program, I was really fortunate that I didn't have to kind of dig my way out to, with the program. It was kind of put in place for me. So, we have taken it, we've maintained certainly the level of success that, we were accustomed to prior to my, taking over as a head coach. But, we constantly try to get a little bit better, each year with it as well. And we're happy with where we're at, but we still have a, long way to go, I think, as well.
And right before we started, you said that you're going through like old film and trying to get some of those big philosophical things like actually on paper. So what are some of those big picture things that you actually want to have written down that you can give to your players and say, hey, this is Baruch basketball?
Yeah, I just think, every coach should have, their philosophy, organized and presentable, not just for jobs that you may want to have one day, but for the job that you do have. And at the Division III level, there's a lot of roster turnover every year, or potential for a lot of roster turnover, as well as coaching turnover as well. And we've been very fortunate to have some really good assistant coaches, but we basically, you know, they pay us to kind of be on staff at, you know, sometimes, or at least it seems that way. So to have it, you know, what we're trying to maybe accomplish is just be a little more clear about what our program is about, on the court, off the court. And if we could put that stuff down and really be, you know, communicate that well to anybody new coming into our program. And it's always a work in progress. It's never a finished document, but it's just something that, you know, through this time, you know, with no season going on, I just, you know, wanted to maybe take a step back and look a little bit more at the big picture stuff rather than, you know, practice planning and the day-to-day stuff that you kind of get caught up with, you know, when you're in with your team.
Thank you for that. Coach Green, you got a question for Coach John Alisi?
Yes, Coach, again, thank you for being on with us today. My question is a tough question, I guess, but I want to dig down. What is your biggest flaw as a coach, and how are you using this time away from basketball to strengthen your flaw, to make it a strength?
It's a great question, and it's one that I ask myself a lot. You know, Ben had, you know, kind of alluded to, you know, what we do and how hard the standards we set. And we set a really high standard for our players, and it can get intense. You know, we're pretty serious about holding them accountable for, you know, what we consider our standards. And, you know, I think the biggest flaw that I have sometimes is, maybe over coaching the team and not understanding the player enough, you know, maybe not relating to them or knowing what's going on in their lives. And, you know, just, you know, I think I have pretty good, you know, relationships with our guys. But it definitely tends at times to get a little, you know, basketball centric, and, you know, having that trust and those relationships with guys off the court. I think if you have that strong foundation with a player, it's going to make them better on the court. So certainly, you know, just making sure that my relationships are solid with the guys that I coach and letting them understand that, you know, I do care about them a lot more than what they give us on the court. You know, sometimes I'm not sure that I'm getting that through to them as much with my actions. You know, I try to tell them as much as I can, but, you know, we can get into guys pretty good when we're trying to accomplish something as a team.
Thank you.
Great question. And, you know, something I think about every day.
Yeah. I think it's something that, at the end of seasons, like, we all self-reflect on it. It's like, how could I have reached this kid or the team? And so it is a tough question. Chris Ballerini, DeWitt Clinton.
Hey, John, once again, thank you for coming on and doing this. My question is about recruiting, especially with this year off. Like, I feel terrible for my seniors who aren't going to be able to showcase their talents and move on. Cause I thought I had a couple, you know, players that could possibly play at the Division III level. What are you looking for? And then what advice would you give a high school coach to kind of showcase their student athletes so that they could possibly get an opportunity at the college level?
Yeah, well, you know, we really find out who John Jay's recruiting, and then we just try to steal them from them. So, all seriousness, you know, it has been a challenging year. Recruiting at the Division III level is really unique. You're not dealing with scholarships. You're not always able to put together the roster that you would like to have as a coach. So I think you need to be very flexible, very adaptable, as a coach. And, you know, we try to, you know, as much as we can, return as many calls, watch as many videos, or return, you know, read emails that recruits and coaches are sending to us. They get a little overwhelming at times, and some, you know, we've missed out on some really good players that, you know, we, you know, didn't do enough follow-up on. But you know, really right now it's a lot of that. It's, I think things like this are great. Networking is really the name of the game in recruiting, in, you know, especially at the Division III level where budgets are minuscule, where we're not able to travel and get out to all of the events. You know, a lot of times, you know, we'll go out to something and we're doing it on our own dime because, you know, that's just what it takes, right? It costs what it costs and to be successful. And sometimes the budget doesn't necessarily reflect that. So you got to kind of take it into our own hands. And we've been, you know, fortunate to have some really dedicated assistants who are willing to, you know, volunteer their time and at times their, you know, their wallet to doing what's right for the program. But in terms of what we're doing this year, it's certainly a really unique year, especially with a lot of seasons being canceled, with the waiver coming, you know, being passed that, you know, everybody's going to maintain their year or, you know, maintain and have an extension of their year of eligibility. So rosters are going to be very interesting. You know, we've heard from a number of kids who are now maybe looking to come back and do grad school because they're now going to have a year of eligibility that they didn't think they were going to have. We may now have kids, you know, stick around an extra year who we thought we might be losing this year. So it's a challenge, and it's still, you know, very, very much up in the air, and there's no real clarity to it. In terms of, I think, what, you know, high school students and high school players and coaches can be doing at this point, communication is the key. I think getting it out there to them, you know, getting on the phone as much as you can with a coach, and, you know, that's really all, you know, there's not much you can do without the ability to go out and evaluate and see kids. So it is definitely going to be a little different this year in terms of how we evaluate. You know, it's going to be a lot more film based. It's going to be a lot more off of word of mouth and recommendations. And, you know, I always feel very comfortable. You know, Ben can tell you, I've taken two of his guys, you know, who I didn't really see play in high school. But, you know, I've got a lot of respect for Ben as a coach. I know the type of program he runs and, you know, never guarantee those guys a spot, but certainly, you know, getting them in the mix and, you know, letting them earn it.
Like, here's a question. This is a little bit. How much video are you guys receiving? Is it, like, overwhelming, the amount of stuff that you guys get?
Yeah, it is. You know, it's everybody wants to play college basketball, and very few probably can, right? So you've got to make quick judgments sometimes, and you've got to just watch a few seconds and, all right, is this worth watching a little more of? And if it's worth watching a little more of, is it worth maybe doing a little more follow-up with a phone call or checking with a coach or something along those lines? We're not perfect at it. I wouldn't even say we're good at it. You know, we probably missed on or passed on a lot of kids, or, you know, not responded enough to a kid that really could have helped us. But, you know, you do the work as best you can, and you identify the kids that you think might fit in with your program. You know, we look for guys, you know, we call them OKGs, our kind of guys for our program, because I don't think we're an easy school to play for. You know, we ask you, you know, to really commit to the defensive end of the court, and that's not necessarily a natural thing for all kids, and it's certainly not an easy thing for a high school kid coming into college to be able to do comfortably. So there's some growing pains, but we look for guys that, you know, we feel are unselfish, they're high character, they're high academic because of the type of school that we are. You know, even if we can get you in the school, we want to make sure that you're going to stay successful and, you know, get your degree, right? Because that's ultimately what, you know, this is all about. So if we don't think that, you know, you're going to be able to handle the academic load or the culture that we try to instill, then, you know, we'll pass on some guys, you know, for that as well. So it's a balancing act. I wish there was a secret. I wish there was more I can give you, but it's really just work.
Cool. Thank you.
I have a follow-up before I throw it to Jay Griffin from John Jay so he can refute what you just said about the recruiting. It's almost like next year is ground one again, like day zero. Like we have this year off. You have these unknowns of the guys coming in, the guys who are going to stay or you thought were leaving. It's like, how are you going about your day-to-day, I guess, now to prepare yourself for next year? You know, or do you guys have a plan? You know, do the players have a plan, a strength, a workout, you know, basketball plan? Like, what is it with the guys that's going on?
Yeah, again, it's been difficult, and I feel terrible for the kids because they're the ones that are getting affected by this the most. You know, we tried to meet weekly, you know, with a group Zoom call like this, but I think we've gotten a little zoomed out at this point. So, you know, we've kind of pulled back on that a bit, just, you know, unless we have, you know, something important to go over or to fill everybody in on. You know, we've been pretty transparent with them about the things that have been happening in the school conference throughout the whole thing. You know, I didn't want to give them any kind of false hope about what was going to happen this year. So we try to be honest with them. We've encouraged them clearly, obviously, to, you know, continue to find ways to improve, and no, regardless of how difficult it may be. You know, we've put together, you know, strength and conditioning stuff that they can do individually with or without, you know, equipment and weights. My associate head coach, Tama Farid, fantastic with the strength and conditioning stuff. You know, so he takes the lead on that. But, you know, in terms of basketball, you know, we just remind them that, look, at some point this thing is going to end, right? And we're going to all be back on the court. And if we don't perform the way that we expect to, you know, nobody's going to say, well, you know, COVID. You know, we're all in the same boat right now. And even if we're not, we still have to play and you know, accomplish what we're trying to accomplish as a program. So the guys that, you know, are doing the work, you know, they'll be rewarded at some point for it. But, you know, the biggest thing for us is like, yeah, like, don't look at this for what it is now. Look at it for what it's going to be when we return, and you have to be prepared for that situation. So.
Yeah, I think it's, I think it, like I said, it's ground zero for everybody. Yeah. You know, I think it's it might be a little more tricky for those of us at the high school level because we really don't know what we have at sometimes. But I think you guys are in the same boat as well. Jay Griffin, John Jay College. Welcome, my man.
Yes, my apologies for being late.
Where were you recruiting?
Sorry about that. Coach, thanks for coming on.
Jay, good to see you.
I think the one thing that I heard about Baruch even before I got to John Jay was, you know, two things. One, they can shoot the three, and two, they can defend. And now being at John Jay, I can say both are very true. Definitely a big admirer of you guys, how you guys defend and get after it. If you could just tell the group maybe about some of your defensive principles, obviously a lot of pack line. How did you come? Were you always a pack line guy? How'd you progress into it? And, you know, just your thoughts on that.
Yeah. You know, look, I was fortunate. I've coached and played for a lot of really good defensive coaches. And I've just been fortunate to be around it. And, I think the, working for Coach Dixon at Pitt, you know, when I did the video coordinator job there in 2005, was really eye-opening, just the way that they taught and just naturally progressed a defense along. Really, you know, the Jamie Dixon, Ben Howland model kind of taught me the best way to teach defense. Like I said, I played for great defensive coaches, my dad at Severian, Ray Rankus at Baruch. We, you know, my freshman year at Baruch, we were you know, number one in the country in both field goal percentage and scoring defense that year, 99-2000. So, you know, kind of like I said, is, you know, you come into a program like that, you're going to learn, you know, how, you know, or else you're just not going to get on the court. So, you know, the biggest, I think, thing for us is the mentality that we're going to be a good defensive team. And that is part of the culture that gets passed down from year to year. Guys that struggle with it a lot their first year, you know, are then teaching it to the younger guys their second year. And it's really a cool thing to see, and something as a coach that you just really admire about your kids is when you see stuff like that happening. I wouldn't necessarily say we're a pack line team. I think we're pretty flexible in what we do. I think it's going to be, you know, always dependent upon your personnel. If I felt we had the personnel to get out and press and play that way, you know, we might do that more. You know, just the types of guys that we have, you know, typically, you know, building our defense out from the basket that we're protecting is, you know, usually the best way for us to go about defending. But, you know, I think a lot of it also has to do with, I'd rather be really good at something than okay at a lot of things. You know, every year I always say to myself, man, I wish we, you know, I really think we should play more zone this year. And I really think we should press more this year. And we end up not doing it as much as I think, because I really feel strongly that you need to build your foundation early in the season. And for us at Baruch, and for you at John Jay, and for all of us Division III coaches, we don't get any preseason with our kids. So we get about 3 weeks and we're playing real games. So I think it's really hard to build a proper foundation if you're doing a million things, because then your kids don't know what's really important in your program. So for us, you know, it's, you know, we're not going to give our guys the bailout of a zone or, you know, the press until we get later in the season and it becomes more of a strategic thing. I think playing zone is really good. I think there's some really good effective zones out there. And, I would love to play more of it, but I really think if you're going to do it well and you're going to get your kids to buy into it, you really got to commit to it from day one. It can't just be a curveball. I think once you've got your man, you know, for us at least, our base defense set, then we can throw a changeup in there as the season goes along based on what we're trying, you know, who we might be playing or that. So, you know, really that's kind of our philosophy to it. I go into every year saying we're going to do A, B, C, and D, and we only end up doing A and B, really just out of time constraints that we have with our kids.
Thanks, Coach.
You're welcome.
I think we all have these, for lack of a better word, delusions of grandeur of doing A, B, C, D, E, F. You know, and we end up, I mean, at me at high school, I think I always end up with like A and halfway to B, maybe. Coach Green.
Hey. Yeah, piggybacking off of that, that ABC in losing place. What's the typical practice like to get your guys, like, because you guys are a good shooting team, a good defense team, and you're trying to put all of that into, I'm not sure, the hours of time. When I was in college, we practiced until coach told us to stop. So in that time frame now that you have, how do you incorporate all of that? So if you don't mind walking with Coach Jay on the phone, walking us through a typical practice.
No, and I don't know, we're taking a few shots here at Jay's expense, but look, it's like I said before, there's no secrets to being good you know, being a good basketball team. Nothing we do should surprise anybody. You know, because, you know, we just want to be really good at what we do. Typical practice, Ben, you've seen us practice a number of times. So I'm actually curious to hear kind of your thoughts on what, you know, your takeaways of what we've done. You know, but for us, it's, you know, we always start with some sort of a warm-up activation period, usually 10 to 20 minutes, where we'll do our stretch, dynamic warm-up, just to kind of activate their bodies. And then we'll do some kind of either warm-up drill or three-man weaves, five-man weaves, or some deep, you know, what we've really started to do with that is, do our defensive footwork and our offensive footwork type stuff. You know, we call it finishing school around the basket. We've started to put a little bit more of an emphasis on, our gather, being able to stop with speed off the dribble, and then execute different types of finishes at the basket. Once we get through that, some kind of, just up and down, full court. Again, we're still trying to get them loose and activated, get into some transition offense, defense. We do transition defense every day, some sort of it. Early in the season, if you came to one of our first three practices of the year, it's basically all we do is transition offense or defense, is just getting that in. How we want to play on both ends, with probably more of an emphasis on the defensive side, building up from 2-on-1 to 3-on-2s, so on and so forth. We try, we'll do a lot of, I'm a big believer in, your players need to see it before they can do it. They need to understand it, both offensively and defensively. We do a lot of 5-on-0 or 3-on-0 breakdowns of our offense, but we also do breakdowns, like walkthrough or 1-on-0, 2-on-0 of our defensive footwork and how do we want to play with our hands and, make sure our feet are right defensively before we try to do it at a competitive level. Because I think whenever you start to, when you go from practice to game or, from practice to live, there's going to be some slippage. So we want to make sure that our technique is really good in the things that we do. And for us defensively, technique means footwork, stance, how are we playing with our hands? Are we utilizing our hands the right way? Are we getting the hands into the ball, like into bodies, which we try to avoid because we don't want to foul. We like showing the officials our hands as much as we can. So we try to do that stuff dry early in practice as well. We try to do it at full speed. We'll get to the point where we're doing it at full speed dry, but it's really just a review of footwork and technique. Because I do think you need both technique and toughness. I think technique is overlooked a lot with on the defensive side of the ball. And then really once we kind of get into, we'll do our breakdowns, we'll do all of our stuff, whatever we need to work on for that day. We try to do a lot of shooting, either beginning or end of practice, not so much in the middle. Then we try to compete. We try to, structure our drills based on what we're working on, but we want some kind of a competition with it where, they're competing for something, running sprints or winners, losers. We want to have that in everything that we do while still holding them accountable for the technique of what we're trying to teach and accomplish offensively or defensively. So, we do spend a lot of time playing both offense and defense and coaching both at the same time because, basketball is a very fluid game and you got to be able to do both of those things. I think it's the best way to learn is to play live. That you'll see a lot of that at practice. That's really, the structure. Well, again, depending on what we're working on it, a lot of very similar drills with slight tweaks from day to day.
Coach. So yes, I really enjoyed when I came out to your practices. I really liked the way you were game prepping. And so you really broke it down and you were breaking down single actions, and just drilling your players on the single actions before you put it into, real gameplay. And so I thought that was a big takeaway for me. To follow up on that though, at Baruch, you have great facilities and you get visiting teams in all the time from high level Division I, NBA. What are your takeaways from there? Like, what are you able to steal from them and have these conversations with those coaches? And what are your takeaways when you watch those practices?
Yeah, everything I do is stolen, like most of us, right? I don't think, I certainly haven't invented anything in the game of basketball. It's been taken from somebody else. I think that's what all the good coaches and great coaches do is they're learners, right? We're all learners. That's why we're all here right now. So we've been really fortunate. Jay, same for you guys at John Jay, is to get the influx of teams coming into our facilities when they're in New York. I think the biggest takeaways that I'll give from, you know, that the highest levels, the major Division I's and the NBA teams, are two things. One is the preparedness of their practice. There's no wasted time. They're very structured, and everybody knows what's going on, and they're very fortunate to have huge staffs and support staff and managers and video guys and rebounders and water boys and people wiping the floor with towels. They've got all that covered. So the coaches can coach, right? Which we all have to do a million other things when we're out on the court. So that's the biggest takeaway, is just how organized the practice is, and how locked in the players are in practice. You know, one of the things, probably the thing that sets me off the most as a coach, and I told you I tend to get a little hard on my guys from time to time, is if I just think we're wasting time, because we don't have a lot of it. And our guys are, look, by and large, our guys are great with what we ask them to do, but my standard is always way higher than everybody else's. And if I think that they're, utilizing practice time in the wrong way, then I get frustrated. It kind of sets me off a little bit. So it's, to see what it is at the highest levels and how locked in the players are, I always try to drive that home to our guys, is like, guys, I'm watching the best players in the world, and they're not, messing around in practice. They're locked in and they're focused, and they know this stuff. Like, they're not trying to learn it. They know it. The second thing I think that I take away from that stuff is the simplicity of what they do. I don't think I've watched one team come in where they're working, or anybody is working on combo moves. Between the legs, behind the back, step back into a spin dribble, jump shot. You just don't see it. What are they working on? They're working on feet set, making the, fundamental stuff, right? Just, making sure feet are set, balance, follow through, the very minor details that, our kids, take for granted, and we try to drill into them. It's like, I watched LeBron James the other day, and he's not doing any of the stuff you're doing. He's just sitting, you know what he's doing? He's doing like Mike and drill. And he's working on, he's just working on footwork. It's LeBron James. So if he can work on that stuff, why are we too good? Why are we so against doing this stuff, right? It's this boring stuff that makes you really good. So, if I get an opportunity to bring one of my guys in there, it is something I do try to point out, but it's certainly been really beneficial for me as a coach to have that accessibility to those types of programs.
Big perk of the job right there.
Huge perk.
Chris Ballard.
Yeah, Coach, you piqued my interest when you talked about being under Jamie Dixon, and you said you learned a lot of just how he implemented the pack line. Can you go a little bit more in depth about that? Because I'm a defensive guy myself. I'm always looking for little, details on these things.
Yeah, so, the biggest thing I thought we did that I love and that I've taken to Pitt, taken to Baruch from Pitt is, and from wherever else I was the thing that we do every single day in some way, aside from like the transition defense, is we'll do competitive shell every day. So shell for us early in the season, it's that dry, it's the fundamental shell, right? Where you're just kind of checking positions and teaching concepts, and there's no real competition to it, right? Kids get bored of that really quickly, but it's important. You have to do it. You can't skip that step. You have to show them that part of it, because it's going to be the foundation of everything else you do as the season goes on. If you don't get that done, you don't get it. But if we did that every day over the course of 70 practices, without any kind of competition, at some point the kids are just not going to be into it, right? And they're just going to go through the motions. You're not going to get it better. What Coach did at Pitt was, we did competitive shell, and where it's really helped us is, as we get into our seasons and we start scouting more, is, we'll start using shell segment of practice to focus on whatever things our upcoming opponent is doing, right? So we would start shell, you know, typically we allot 15 to 20 minutes for it. We split up into three or four teams, depending on how many guys you have. And we try to do it 4-on-4 if we can. We think it's a little harder to defend four guys than five because there's more space. So we try to do it 4-on-4. If we need a coach in there as like a passer or just to fill a spot to run something, we will. But if we have too many guys, we'll go 5-on-5 also. So, you know, we're not married to it. But the way, you know, we do it is usually that first time through, each team will get a rep of whatever we're working on that day. And we're just, you know, checking their technique. Okay. So let's say we were defending, you know, wing pass, UCLA cut, side ball screen, you know, and then something on the weak side. If that was the action we were working on. Jay, what do you call that? Utah for you guys? Jazz? When Ryan does this thing?
Utah.
So if we were defending something like that, you know, we would, you know, go through it from a technique angle first, right? We just, here's how we're defending this. Okay, this, you know, you could get this UCLA cut. We're going to defend it this way. When he gets to the ball screen, here's where we all need to be. And then when we get to this point, we're going to play live. So we do a technique run first, and then we'd start playing live. And all of our, you know, the shell drill is always going to be scored defensively, right? That's going to be our defensive constraint. Is it's going to be you only get points if you get a stop. And we're really hard on them. So you've got to get a stop or a turnover. Or, you know, you've got to make sure everybody's getting a block out in. So we have our coaches set up wherever they may be. And if they play a perfect possession of defense, but all four guys don't check a block out or go and physically block their man out, we're going to have either myself or one of the assistant coaches, you know, usually we assign one assistant coach to be in charge of it. You know, they're going to put their hand up and yell no block out in the most demeaning way possible. So everybody in the gym hears it and they're going to get no point. And then they're going to get off and the other team's going to come on. So we'll play until one team gets four stops and you're rotating offense, defense. And it's just, I thought it was just a really good way to compete while also teaching how we want to defend things. I think, like I said, defense comes down to two things, technique and toughness. And I think if you don't have equal parts both, you know, you're going to lack in some way.
No, that summed it up perfectly. Thanks, Coach.
Coach, I think I have two last questions for you. First, I want to try, if I can, get inside your head. 2019 CUNY Championship, 4.7 seconds left, I think, tie score. You have ball baseline out of bounds on the other end. Mm-hmm. You have all five guys lined up out of bounds. You know, I think you got some attention for this. You know, it's like they referenced it as like a football lineup. Yep. You know, what's your thinking in there? What did you think CSI was going to do, and like what made you line up that way?
So, look, it's coaching such a great fraternity to be in. You know, things like this, the podcasts and the Twitter and the stuff that you can find these days without having to go to clinics and all that. Like everything's at your fingertips, and we're like I said, we're all lifelong learners. Probably about 3 to 4 weeks prior to that game, I had seen a clip on Twitter, I guess, John Brannon at Northern Kentucky at the time, now the head coach of Cincinnati, used that same alignment as a press breaker to get the ball in bounds. And I just thought it was so unique. I said, wow, that really makes sense because, you know, as a basketball coach, it's so hard because the game's always moving, right? Football, it's always you reset and you run your patterns and your routes and you reset, right? And you have all these – basketball's hard. You can't really do that. The goal of basketball is not to get a completed pass, right? You've got to score, so you got to have multiple actions. But I loved the idea of if you needed to get the ball in bounds and against some kind of pressure, just almost running it like a football and have a guy sprinting and – planting and button hooking back or whatever it may be. We never practiced it. We never talked about it as a team, but it was always in the back of my mind, having seen it. And, you know, the funny thing is one of my players, Andre Harris, that year, texted me a link to that, you know, at whatever point, you know, a couple of weeks before the game. And, you know, just like, hey, did you see this? And I said, yeah, I've already, you know, put it into my memory and, you know, we'll break it out one day. And we never talked about it again, never practiced it. But, you know, really look, you know, TJ Tibbs at Staten Island is a tremendous coach. He was on our staff. It was really challenging playing against his teams because of how familiar he was with us and just the rivalry in general. Like they did a really good job of stifling us in a lot of different ways. And I knew we needed to do something that would catch them a little bit off guard. You know, I think something that with 4 and 4.7 seconds, that's an eternity of time if you utilize it properly. I think a mistake that teams make with that much time is they try to throw the ball the length of the court, gets deflected, gets intercepted, you go to overtime or you lose. I thought we had plenty of time. And really all we were trying to do was just create confusion for their defense and then just see if we can find a gap, right? And we wanted ultimately what we were trying to do is just let our point guard drive as far as he could and see what he can get out of it. There was no talk about throw it to this guy, is you'll have options, just let's, you know, get it up there as quickly as we can. We get into the huddle. You know, the first thing with that was we had to just kind of get the guys back settled down, right? Because we had just given up the game tying three. So we just wanted to get into what's next, right? Let's look forward. We didn't even talk about the three. We didn't even talk about whose fault it was or what happened. Is, all right, here's what we're going to do. And if it works, great. And if it doesn't, we go to overtime, whatever. Right? There wasn't a whole, I mean, not that there wasn't pressure, but it's a lot different in a tie game than it is, you know, being down one or two there. Ultimately we were just trying to create confusion. We probably confused ourselves, to be honest with you, but when the shot goes in, right, it goes viral. If the shot misses, nobody's talking about it. So ultimately it comes down to execution and what the players do on the floor, and they executed the heck out of it, and we were really fortunate to win.
Did you give them lanes to run? Like,
yeah. What? Yeah, we did. We, we put them in the line. You know, we just drew it up, and same thing. It was just, okay, we're going to break you off first. Okay, you're going to come off second and get to this side. You're going to come off third, and you know, we told them kind of, you know, where to run. It was more just kind of crisscrossing. We just basically gave them a sequence. Like, you go first, you break off second, you know, and then you'll come in last and see if you can get the, you know, just get the pass. And it just, we were just trying to get downhill. What was the biggest thing there?
Well, it worked, and it was a big shot. The last thing before I let you go, because we were talking a lot about this self-reflection and you're putting your philosophy, on paper in the beginning. So I want to know, when you're done with coaching, or better yet, when your players are done with the program, how do you want them to remember their time and you as their coach?
It's just somebody that cared. I talked earlier about, you know, the easiest thing that I've had, you know, that has helped me has been all the work that was done before I ever got here. I'm part of the history as a player, right? So, like, I'm part of a lot of different groups at Baruch. You know, I'm an alum. I'm a coach, I was a player, you know, a student. So, you know, I'm very much in the fabric of it, and you know, none of this would have been, you know, possible without Ray Rankin is. DeWitt Clinton graduate, by the way, Chris. He really was an incredible mentor to me, just somebody who I respected so much and missed a lot. You know, we would always talk basketball and throughout the seasons, and it was always my my morning car ride talk. But you know, we consider ourselves a family, and I think that's a very overused thing in sports, right? Because nothing replaces your actual family. But there's parallels with sports and family atmosphere. And you know, when you care for people and other people's success as much as you care for your own, I think that's what separates, you know, average teams from great teams. Or even look, I mean, even if you're not a very successful team, but you're that invested in each other, you know, that in and of itself, right? You remember that stuff, right? I mean, there's plenty of bad teams that had no success that are super close off the court, and they go to each other's weddings, and they have, you know, they're just part of each other's lives. And I think that's a great thing about sports and basketball, and something we've really tried to, you know, make a priority at Baruch. You know, we do little, you know, we try to do things every year for the program. You know, we want our kids to feel like they're part of something bigger than themselves, and they're part of something bigger than just a basketball team. You know, we do our alumni game every year where we bring back 30 alums to play prior to one of our games. You know, we give them all a t-shirt, anybody that comes back, whether you play in the game or not. You know, and this year's t-shirt, you know, had the word family written across the chest. And within the letters was the name of every player that ever put on a Baruch jersey. Because I, you know, again, it's not just a word, right? It there's meaning to it. There's the people that are part of it. You know, that's what the family is. It's not just a word that we say. We do a postseason awards dinner every year where we recognize, you know, that year's team. We bring in a keynote speaker, a former player to kind of, you know, share their experiences, you know, about Baruch and where, you know, their life has taken them. And it's really kind of the last chance we get to say goodbye to our seniors as players, and their chance, their send off, you know, they get up and they give, you know, they each give a speech about their time in the program and what it's meant to them. And it's amazing how many of those guys, don't get through that speech without, you know, getting choked up or teary eyed because it means so much to them. And, for me, that's the greatest gift that I have that I get out of it is that, no matter how hard it was, whether it was good or bad for them, you know, they were part of something. And, you know, that's ultimately, I think, what I hope guys remember is just kind of, I guess I'm just the keeper of the program at this point, right? It's, I'm just kind of, you know, a caretaker. And someday I won't be, and hopefully whoever replaces me will continue to, you know, make it the family that it is and recognize everybody that came before it and, you know, continue to build it the way it's been built for 35 years.
Coach, thank you. Coach John Alisi, thank you for your time today. I really do appreciate you. Appreciate you giving us your time, especially with the new addition to your family. I look forward to you coming back to some of your practices and seeing some of your games as always next year, well, or as soon as we can, I should say.
Yeah. Thank you so much, guys. It was really a pleasure to spend some time with you. And, you know, I've tuned into a couple of the other ones that you're doing, and I know it kind of gets, you know, gives you guys the basketball fix, but, you know, I certainly think these types of conversations help out other coaches as well. So appreciate the work that you all are doing as well.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you for tuning in to this edition of the Basketball Coaches Roundtable Podcast. Remember to follow us on Twitter at BCR Podcast 11.